Welcome to Steve's Rules, a periodic podcast featuring Steve Nelson, Executive Principal at McCormick Group in the Law and Government Affairs Practice. My name is Murray Coffey, and I'm the principal of M. Coffey, a law firm marketing and business development boutique. For more information, please visit my website at mcoffey.net. Steve has been an executive recruiter for nearly three decades, and without naming names, he is ready to spill the tea on best practices and maybe a few not so best practices by firms and candidates that he has seen during his career recruiting some of the most driven and successful professionals into highly profitable and growing firms. Steve is a former lawyer and journalist and is a fellow of the College of Law Practice Management and a proud son of Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Full transparency here, Steve has helped my career immensely through the years and has become something of a career shaman to me, and I know many others. Hey, Steve, welcome back.
Hey.
This is the Thanksgiving edition, and I'm thankful for you, Steve.
I'm thankful for you.
But we're back. We're in the dreaded fourth quarter for our law firm friends, which means that they will ignore us until January.
That is absolutely the case.
That doesn't mean that they shouldn't be thinking about recruiting, and it doesn't mean that they shouldn't be following trends. So I know that you and your brainiacs at McCormick Place are always keeping track of trends and seeing what's going on and seeing what's hot. And I know you've got some thoughts on all of that. So let me turn it over to you, because I don't know what you're going to say here. So I'm excited to hear what you have to say.
All right. So not only do we keep our records, but we also follow the other people who are keeping statistics. The Decipher Group, which is out there.
We mentioned last time, I believe.
Yeah, and they do a lot of tracking of information. They've come out with statistics for the first 9 months of the year, basically reported that overall recruiting is down, partner level down less so than associate, not surprising, but down 4% from 2022. That's still up from even pre-COVID years. So still a strong market. Interestingly, a couple of interesting things that they also reported. One was that the council level hiring is significantly down. And that makes sense, because I think after COVID, you did have a spate of retirements and people easing back. And so there was more succession planning going on, succession hiring going on. And I think that coupled with, sort of more difficult economic times has led firms to be more conservative about investment. And councils are usually investment hires. So I think that's number one. Number two was interesting is that of all of the markets, geographic-wise, Chicago was the only market that indicated an increase, which I know is near and dear to your heart, being a native Chicagoan. But that was interesting. I've got some ideas as to why that is.
Yeah, why is that? I mean, Chicago kind of goes up and down in its market. And if you talk to anybody from Chicago about what's going on in Chicago right now, they're going to say everything's down. But actually, that's not the case.
That's right.
So, what's going on?
Yeah, I think it's because I think that we're seeing increased billing rate increases across the board, across the country. And I believe that I think corporate law departments are more willing to accept that from New York firms or New York offices. And I think they look at, if they're going to go to a Chicago firm or a Chicago office, they're expecting lower rates. And I think that the big firms are pushing their rates just like the New York firms are. And let's face it, you're talking about big Chicago firms that are out there that are that they're as prestigious as the New York firms. But we're also seeing, interestingly enough, that even some of the Midwestern firms are pushing their rates up. So with this constant pushing rates up, that is the number one thing that we're seeing that is forcing laterals to think about changing. Is they're just getting pushed on rates. Their clients are pushing back, and they're feeling like, I've got to go someplace with a lower rate structure. We're seeing that across the board, and I think in Chicago, that hits home even harder.
Yeah, those thrifty Midwesterners, right? So we're actually seeing partners getting priced out of their own firms.
Right. Absolutely.
Is there any
Absolutely.
practice that you're seeing that where that's more prevalent than others?
I really see that's pretty much across the board, maybe not on the corporate M&A side. You know, that practice probably can handle the rates, but we're seeing it particularly in IP. We're seeing it in litigation. You know, we're seeing it labor and employment. I mean, we're seeing it pretty much all of the sort of non, public company tech kinds of practice areas.
Interesting. Well, we'll need to keep an eye on that and see where things are going. I know you all are tracking that, and that's a service to the sector for sure. But let's hop into today's topic, which is really understanding the various kinds of relationships that can be developed between recruiting firm and their clients, really bringing it down to contingency or retained search. And we'll talk a little bit about the benefits of each and where there might be a hybrid approach along the way. Steve, I think, maybe we can define terms here and talk a little bit about what is contingency. I think a lot of people in our world know it, but let's hear it from somebody who knows it.
Right. So contingency obviously means that the recruiting firm only gets paid at when they make a placement. They don't have any upfront payment at all. It's just based on success. And if you success, you get a big fee, et cetera. And that is in the law, in the legal world, in the partner and associate for the talent, that has been the traditional way that firms have used recruiters. Haven't been as much retained work. And there's a good reason for that, which is if I'm a law firm and I want, let's say, an intellectual property partner, patent litigator, let's say, the chances of any one search firm finding that person in a 6-month period is pretty low. There aren't that many people in the market. No matter what we hear about in terms of how much movement there is, there aren't that many really strong partners with business who are ready to move at any one particular time. And therefore, the chances of success are really low. And law firms don't want to start paying out money, totally understandable, paying out money and then having to report back to management. So, well, we paid this retained firm's $50,000 and we didn't get anybody, right? So it's pretty logical that that's the way it works. And then if you take it from there, the way that law firms traditionally use recruiters is they will call up their recruiters of choice, whether 4 or 5 different recruiters, let them know about what they're looking for, and then they let them go out. They basically let the recruiters go out, find the people, and come back to the firm with their selected candidates. So it is pretty much almost totally outsourcing the job to the recruiters to find the talent. And that's, and then obviously definitely recruiters get their percentage of people they can find, they can present, and a fair number of instances they're successful. Not a majority of the time, but certainly there is some success there. And that's the way the recruiting firms generally do that. Now, so there's an advantage, obviously, because you've got a lot of people working for you. You can get the good talent. It's particularly good, I think, for groups, because groups will often, when the preformed group has decided to move, they'll call their recruiter of choice. They realize the benefits that a recruiter will give them. And so therefore those groups can sometimes be placed by the recruiter of choice who happens to have the relationship with them one way or another. So there's a benefit there. The downside is that the firm never has assurance that everybody is actually, that anybody's actually doing any real work. Are they just calling their buddies? Are they calling people they know, the people they've placed, you know, so forth? Or, you know, is there a really market coverage going on? And I don't think so, because I think that the recruiters are, you know, they're trying to figure out the best way to make the placement. And if they can make as few calls as possible, that's what they'll do.
Sure.
So that's number one. Number two, I think, is depends a little bit on your on a law firm's placement, you know, in the tier of firms. If you're a top firm and you've got a name reputation, there's a good chance that the candidates that a recruiter will generate have a good chance of being sent to your firm, because they'll be the firm that they think of and that, you know, has the reputation, and that when they talk to their lawyers, the lawyers know the firm. So they say, oh yeah, I'll go there. It's not as valuable for firms that aren't, you know, in the top tier in terms of the firms. If you're not a known quantity, you may never get called. You may, the best candidates will never get to you, because they'll call everybody else first. It's, you know, you're in a tiered situation. And if you're in a contingency mode, there's no incentive for the firm to think of your mid-sized firm. So I think that's a downside that you've got to be thinking about.
You know, we're entering the beginning of the year, you know, the pre-sale time, if you will, in the beginning of the year. And I know it happens at the beginning of the year after all the ledgers are taken care of. There's oftentimes a fresh look at the strategic plan, or maybe there's some new strategic planning that's going on, or, you know, measuring success against the strategic plan over the prior year. And a lot of times with firms that are looking for growth, they'll say, okay, there is a practice that we don't have that we need to have in place that's going to be strategically important for us to be able to go to the next level with our M&A group or whatever the case might be. So we need a team of benefits lawyers, let's say, and that happens. Say that we or you know, our benefits lawyers left, we need to get benefits lawyers in. Does it behoove them to work with the firms to be working on a contingency basis in that situation, or a retained situation? We'll talk about retainer in just a minute. But I'm just kind of curious about how you said that the groups that are looking to move may want to work with somebody who works on a contingency basis. What if you're trying to fill a gap or create a strategic strap on?
Right. So, yeah, let me qualify a little bit on the group situation. There will be sort of the preformed group that, you know, there's at least a reasonable shot that they will be using a contingency firm, because they're the ones hiring. They're hiring the search firm, not the law firm, if you know what I mean. So I think, so you always want to keep that option open, at least at the beginning of your search process. It's probably a good idea if you're just starting to look at it, is that let's see what the market will give us. You know, let's see what benefits lawyers, let's say, will maybe out there. And again, more, you know, particularly if you're looking at a group. I think that where it's really, you know, whether when you are on a strict time frame, you've got to get this group in the next 3 months, 6 months, something like that, and or you're going to lose business. That's when you may want to think about retained, because I think what happens is on contingency, one of the things you don't get is you don't get market coverage. You're never assured that everybody out there is being called. And second thing is you're not getting feedback on the marketplace either. Generally, I mean, if you're sending a contingency firm out there, they'll call you when they have somebody. They're not going to go out and volunteer a lot of information about, well, you know, occasionally they'll say, you know, we can't succeed because your reputation is bad or something. But you're not getting that kind of real feedback. And you're also, the other thing that you don't necessarily get is if you need, let's say, you know, there are five or six people, you know, in the market, they're great lawyers. You might know them a little bit. you're not willing to call them up on the phone. A lot of lawyers do not want to call up other other lawyers and ask them. I mean, that can happen. It's great you can do it, but a lot of times there's, you know, there's a hesitancy there. And particularly because if you, let's say you call that person up and that person, you find out, you know, person doesn't have enough business or whatever. And now you've got to try to figure out a way to let them, let them down.
How to gracefully walk away.
Well, your dowry wasn't big enough, right? So I think that there's a real reason to bring in a search firm. And so that's where retainer becomes important, because it's a search firm's dedicated to you, and you know they're dedicated to you, and they know they're giving your feedback. They're, you know, we when we do these retain agreements, we always have a schedule. Usually every 2 weeks, we're checking in and telling you what we've done and what the market's saying. We provide reports at the end of a search if we're not successful. You know, a lot of times we are successful, but when we're not, we'll give you a report that says, okay, we called these people, and we can't tell you anything told to us in confidence. But if things, you know, people can say, I'm not interested in leaving at all, or I'm not interested in going to a firm like that, or whatever. So I think you want to have that information. Market information is worth something.
Absolutely.
You know, whether it's the market information about yourself, whether it's the market information about particular candidates. Sometimes we've had firms who we do that project with, we give them that information. 2 years later, that candidate becomes available. And they know, at that time, they know more about that candidate than they did going in. They know that that person might be very valuable. So there's a real benefit to a law firm, but they have to understand, and they have to have management understand, that this is not a guarantee of success. It's, you're paying for market information. You're paying for somebody who's dedicated on your behalf.
And let's talk about retained while we're in this, you know, and kind of the outline of that retainer relationship. I think you've talked about some of the pluses on it, but maybe you can define it a little bit here and dig into the pluses. I have specific thoughts about retained search. That's what I typically like to do.
Right. You know, I guess first of all, the amount of the retainer is pretty standard, at least in our work. It's a flat fee. It is not a percentage of the placement. So if you're looking for a partner that you're going to pay $1 million, you know, and then the fee on that in general, the general terms is like $250,000 fee. We're not going to ask you for a third of the fee up front. That's way too much money. So I'm not going to tell you what we charge. It does depend a little bit on the size of the firm and the size of the project, but it's not at the level of a third of a fee, which is what is standard in the retain industry. If you're looking for a COO of a law firm, that's what you pay, you know. And it's, and these days at a major firm, COOs make $1 million. So you can figure it out. That's number one. You don't pay that. Number two is the time period in which that gets applied to the fee. So you pay us a retainer, and then, you know, 6 months down the road, we make a placement, that amount is applied. And at least our firm does it. We extend that even another year, because if in case we're successful, and this has happened many times, we're not successful during the first 90 days, but we're successful a year later, we still apply the fee in that situation. So the fee is sort of, and we have often, we even, to be fair, I mean, it's, we don't love to do it, but we'll end up doing it, which is we're doing a corporate search for a firm, and then we come in with a litigator a year later, we end up applying the fee. That's just the way it works. And so that you do get the money back if we're successful in any endeavor on your behalf.
Well, that's a fair shake.
Okay. The other thing I'd like to stress on retainer is, if we attract a candidate on your behalf, on a firm's behalf, and you're interested and you start discussions with a candidate, we, under our terms, we are prohibited from sending that candidate to another firm. So even if they ask us, you know, they say, listen, I'm in the market now. I want to look at other firms. We are not allowed to do that except with the permission of the firm that we are, that we have contracted with. Now, sometimes they allow us to do it anyway, but I can get into that. But that was in a contingency situation. Yeah. If I get somebody for your firm, I'm free to send them anywhere I want.
So if you're on a, make sure I understand this. So if you have a retained search and you present a candidate and the firm says, no, that's not the candidate that we're looking for, you can't turn around and then shop that.
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is if I present that candidate and you are interested in interviewing him or her, we cannot send that candidate anywhere else at the same time.
So during the courting stage, right. if a firm says, hey, you know what, let's bring that person in and let's talk to them. You can't then try to work with another firm on this person's behalf. Right. But if they reject them, yeah, you can.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously you're free. It's more about what happens when there is interest. Because again, in the contingency situation, even if my first call to a candidate was about firm A and firm A is interested, if I'm on a contingent basis, I've got the total freedom to send them to firm B, C, or D, and it becomes a competition. And the firms understand that. I mean, it's not like the firms get upset if you're doing contingency, but that's an advantage of doing it on a retained basis.
Got it. Okay. And is there any sort of hybrid where you're kind of working with a firm and with your feet in both camps?
Well, not really, except for the fact that the fee is so, the percentage that we get up front is so small that it tends to work more like a contingency arrangement. So I think that's true. The other thing I will say, though, and I'm not sure this is true for other firms that do retained work, but our view is if we're doing a retained work for your firm and by just chance, nobody else has really been calling, on your behalf, but somehow a candidate comes your way either through a personal relationship or through another recruiter, and it's a good candidate, we encourage you to talk to them. We just need to be informed. But other than that, we're not exclusive to the point that you couldn't consider another candidate that just happens to be on the market at the same time. That does happen. And we just feel like if we're doing a retained work, you shouldn't be excluded from that.
Now, I've heard in some instances where if it's a retained search and you wind up hiring somebody who wasn't presented by the firm, by the recruiter, that the recruiter still gets a piece of that. Is that right?
Can you repeat that?
So if you have a retained search, you have a relationship with a firm that's a retained search, and that firm finds or has a candidate walk in the door that you have not presented, and they decide they want to hire that person, they're free to do so. But what is the impact on the fee?
Again, I can only speak to what we do. We would not try to charge a fee in that situation.
I see.
As long as if we are not involved in the actual recruiting of the candidate, that's not, we wouldn't get charged for that. Now, that's a little bit different than the situation where the firm says, we know of a candidate, we've worked with this candidate, but we want you to hire, we want you to recruit them directly. Yeah. Yeah. Then we get paid, although often we negotiate what that fee is.
Got it. Wow. It's a lot to consider for the firms. And I wonder if the firms think through all the various, aspects of it, as you outlined here, or if they just say, oh, we only do contingency or we only do retain. without thinking, is this really the right way to proceed, or what is the right way to proceed on a given search? Because I assume too that it's from search to search, it may be they may want to handle it differently.
Yeah. One other thing I would say that has an impact on that is that we often do consulting before we even do a search. In other words, a firm will come to us and they have, let's say, they want to know what their perception in the market is.
Right.
Or they say, we want to have an honest evaluation of whether we can build this practice in this city. And so we will often get hired to do that kind of work up front, you know, with no obligation on either side to use us to recruit. So that is another aspect of it, which allows the firm to understand how we work, understand, you know, what the issues are going to be, how they can craft their story to attract these people. And we get more information about the firm. I know that we've done studies of when we've done consulting versus other situations when we've done retained search. We are we're successful about three times as much when we do consulting on the front end than we do if we're just doing a retained search, because it's both sides get so much benefit out of, you know, the amount of intensive work that's being done during the consulting phase.
Yeah. It almost seems like, the high performing savvy firms would want to have that research done before they got started, because there's right. You know, unless they've got a really strong presence in that particular jurisdiction and really know it backwards and forwards, you're always going to know it better.
Right.
Yeah. And they can make the go, no go decision. And I think a lot of ideas are also come up through all of this, and you know, people really figure out what they want, what they need, right. Instead of just saying, well, you know, go to the biggest firm in that jurisdiction and get me the leader of that particular practice. Well, that might not be the right way to go, right? It might be that it's better to go after somebody in a local office. Who knows?
Yeah. Plus, if there is a successorship issue, you know, you've got that retiring partner. You want somebody who can devote some time, some percentage of their time to the clients that have already been developed. You don't want somebody who's got, you know, $2 million of their own business and they're going to put all of their time into their existing clients. That doesn't do you any good. You end up losing the clients anyway. So you have to think that through. And sometimes you need that consulting help to figure all that out.
A lot to chew on, Steve. And before we close, we haven't done this in a couple of our last go rounds. But those of you who are maybe listening to the podcast for the first time, you clearly hear the professional acumen of my good colleague Steve here in terms of executive recruiting. But what you may not know is that Steve's side hustle is that he is a stand-up comedian, and so once in a while we get a chance to hear some of his work, and I think you've got a something for us today that I think is both topical and quite humorous.
All right, so people always come to me and they always ask things like, these are often non-lawyers, but sometimes lawyers as well. So say, if you ever placed a senator or a cabinet official or somebody really famous? And the answer, honestly, is no, I haven't done that. But I have placed five lawyers who've been fired by Donald Trump.
And are they putting that on the resume? Is that now a resume builder?
Yes. No, I don't think so.
Well, very good. All right, Steve. Well, thank you, as always, for your wisdom and your thoughts. And if you have any questions or you have suggestions or you've got a topic that you'd like to see us cover in one of these podcasts, please let Steve and or I know. You'll find our email addresses in the show notes for the show. And please keep those cards and letters coming, right?
Right. Steve? Comment, like us, all that stuff.
All that stuff that you hear all the time. Right. All right, Steve. Take care.
Right. Take care.
We'll talk soon. Bye-bye.